Our final story this hour is also about travel, but there's no tragedy, just a lot of pork. Last fall, 23-year-old Molly Boz traded in her job as a chef at a Michelin-starred French restaurant for a three-week road trip. She set out to learn all she could about American barbecue, and she brought her father along for the ride, professional photographer Doug Boz. The two of them documented their travels on a blog called Adventures in Barbecue, and they both joined us to explain why they took the journey.
I've always been, I guess you could say, ferociously obsessed with pork. I find the pig to be an incredible animal in terms of its versatility in the cooking world, and that's the world that I live in.
And Doug, what made you want to basically drop everything and go on this little adventure? I mean, I don't know if you even like barbecue.
Oh, I do. I do share her interest in pork, and although I have to say that I think up until that point, barbecue wasn't something that I was intensely interested in, but when your 23-year-old chef daughter asks you to go on a road trip with her, I think it took me maybe 3 or 4 seconds to answer, yes, I'm there.
So you guys decide that not only are you going to go on a little food tour, but this isn't just any foodie tour, right? You plan on learning from the experts, from the pitmasters. Molly, tell us, what is a pitmaster?
So a pitmaster is the man who tends the fire, generally speaking, in the back of the barbecue shack. He will be there from 2 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon shoveling coals into a fire and tending to whole hogs and pork shoulders all night.
And Doug, Molly got to work some of these pits, and I was wondering, since you've got the photographer's eye, if you could describe some of them, what they look like, or one that struck you in particular.
In North Carolina, we went to Allen and Sons, and were invited to come at whatever hour we wanted to. So we arrived at around 6:30 in the morning, and Keith Allen's pit is very dark. I think the only light in that room was the light of the fire itself. He would open the exterior doors in order to control the draft, in order to pull a lot of smoke out of the room, or to allow it to collect. It was a very smoky environment.
Now, people feel pretty strongly about barbecue, and I'm wondering, by the end of the trip, what you learned about the different regions and what was your favorite, if you would deign to kind of come down on a particular side?
Personally, and I think I speak for myself and my father, I think that we pretty much hit the jackpot in Texas.
Without a doubt.
Truly, Texas blew our minds. I have never tasted a more delicious piece of unadulterated meat in my life.
And what are some of the regional differences? Like, what makes Texas barbecue, Texas barbecue?
Well, because Texas is cattle land, you see the appearance of beef in Texas as opposed to in North Carolina and South Carolina, where it's primarily pork. So beef brisket, beef sausage, also pork sausage, massive beef ribs. That's the kind of food that you find down there. And we went to one small town in Texas called Lockhart, which is supposedly the barbecue capital of Texas. And we ordered one sausage, known as a hot ring, and bit into the sausage, which was so juicy inside that as soon as you bit into it, it literally popped, and fat and juices from the meats were actually dripping down my arm. And it was so bursting with flavor and with moisture. I have never tasted a sausage like this before.
And the texture was unusual. It was coarsely ground.
Coarsely ground, yeah.
Now, forgive the pun, but of course I have a bone to pick with you guys. My favorite barbecue place is Rendezvous in Memphis. And I see you did not go to Kansas City, which some would think would render the whole trip moot.
Well, that's going to have to wait, I suppose, to part two.
We do plan on picking this trip up where we left off and hitting up all the spots that we weren't able to make it to. So fear not, Kansas City is in the near future.
Molly and Doug, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
That's Chef Molly Boz and her father, photographer Doug Boz. They spoke to us from NPR New York. They traveled more than 4,000 miles by car from New York to Texas and back to learn about regional variations in American barbecue. They documented their journey on the blog Adventures in Barbecue. You can find a link to that blog and see photos from their trip on our website, npr.org.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
Sales of organic milk were up 15% last year over 2010. Apparently, people like the taste and perceived health benefits from milk that comes from cows free of artificial hormones and that are not fed grains exposed to pesticides. Still, your next carton may be more expensive and in some areas harder to find. Grace Hood from member station KUNC explains.
Lately, more grocery shoppers like Lisa Viviani have been reaching for organic dairy.
You got it?
Yeah.
Good job.
Viviani is standing in a Fort Collins, Colorado natural grocer's. She hands over organic half and half to her small daughter, Lily, who puts it into their shopping cart.
I just don't want any of the other chemicals and hormones that go into the other milk.
At the natural grocer's chain, sales are even higher than the national rate. And store manager Emily Krawcheck says that's translated into issues with one supplier.
They are still able to provide us with a product, but not nearly the volume that we were seeing in previous times.
So far, the shortage has been most pronounced on the East Coast and in the southeastern grocery chain Publix, which started posting signs in dairy cases explaining, "Where's my organic milk?" Processors are having a hard time ramping up supply to meet demand. And it's all because organic dairymen like Arden Nelson are getting pinched by the high cost of organic grain and hay.
What happens when you can't pay your bills is you look at the most expensive thing and you say, we're going to have to do with less of that. And when dairymen feed less grain, cows give less milk.
Nelson is standing in a narrow, fluorescent-lit milking parlor, a small building on the edge of his northern Colorado farm. Gray metal machines and clear tubes obscure the six cows on either side. In December, feed costs were so high that the Western Organic Dairy Producers Alliance wrote a letter to a dozen major milk processors asking for a 20% raise. That's $5 more per 100 pounds of milk.
But that's only to get to break even. That's not to have enough of a living to have health insurance. And there's not enough money to even fix broken equipment.
So far, the response from processors to the Alliance's letter has been lukewarm. Just one, Cooperative Organic Valley, has offered a $2 per hundredweight increase for its farmers starting in March, $3 less than what was requested.
The conversation about a fair price can become very difficult.
Organic Valley CEO George Seaman cites limits in the amount and speed at which his co-op can offer farmers raises.
There's so many farm models out there in so many different debt levels and droughts, non-droughts.
Seaman says that some of the increase Organic Valley pays farmers will get passed along to consumers. He estimates in the next month shoppers could see as much as a 50-cent increase for a half gallon of organic milk. Ultimately, he says the goal is to adjust what farmers are paid so that new organic dairymen will want to enter the business. But that takes time, 1 year to transition a herd to organic feed and up to three to transition land.
Everybody has to work together.
Bill Wales is a professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University. He says that while many organic dairy farmers are losing money, retailers and processors are profiting. The issue is that organic dairymen have little control over what they're paid.
That's where the dairy farmers are caught, because they actually know what their costs are, but they can't control their costs, and they take the price that the processor has given them.
Despite the challenging business model, Organic Valley estimates it has 180 new farmers that will start producing milk next year. For NPR News, I'm Grace Hood in Fort Collins, Colorado.